reasons, and I apologize for the delay, but they were preparing the public announcements relative to the overall targets for the three bills that have been under discussion. The bill that we have here before us, the tax bill, and then the capital investment bill. They wanted that announcement to go out publicly from the leadership corners, and so that has been done. And so I'm going to ask my co-chair, Senator Cohen, to share with the committee members, who probably know by now because it was emailed out, but maybe for the audience what the overall targets are for the supplemental appropriations bill. So, Senator Cohen.
Okay, thank you. So the target number for this conference committee, and I know I think conferees have been apprised, but the general fund target number is $293 million. And keep in mind that there will be some undetermined set-offs against that that will be expenditures made elsewhere but not within this conference committee. But we'll be counted against the $293 million. We don't expect that's going to be a huge amount, but it's probably going to be at least several million, but indeterminate as to how much because there are a couple of, there remain a couple of moving pieces. The 16-17 tails target for this committee is $883,500,000. And again, there are some other pieces that will be counted against that, and we have not fully determined what those will be. There is not a revenue target for this conference committee. That's the general fund target. And obviously, as I've indicated a couple of times, we'll have the opportunity to discuss whether or not it's appropriate to look at other revenues. But we do not have a revenue target for this conference committee. And I know to the Senate conferees that will sound like a significant increase, and to be fair, probably to the House conferees, like somewhat of a decrease. And it doesn't matter whether we're House or Senate. I know in some of the work I've done with Mr. Nauman, Representative Carlson, I have not had a chance to talk in detail. We'll probably do so later tonight or certainly tomorrow. This will still be a pretty tough number and a pretty difficult number. There are some things that we may or may not have to include that we don't have, and we got some work to do. But those are the numbers. And the other thing we should indicate is, and particularly to our conferees, and I think Senate folks know this, hope I'm not speaking out of school, but the instruction is to finish end of the night Sunday. So,
and I had shared that with the House conferees, so they're aware that we will probably be here through the weekend.
So, Senator Tomassoni, I don't know if there when the next hockey series starts, but
tomorrow.
8:30 is it?
Yes.
Friday night.
Which city?
Chicago.
My college town, so you can't go there.
Northwestern. You could get there by then.
We could go back and forth pretty easily. Yeah.
Well, that
1 hour.
That probably means
negotiate it on the plane if you want.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, maybe if he wants to attend the hockey game, we can just, for the article he's most interested in, or articles, we'll just take the House positions.
That works.
That way you can feel that way you can feel free to to attend the game. Maybe not everybody knows that Senator Tomassoni has quite a background in hockey.
Well, I think everybody knows.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the older I get, the better I was.
Okay. We will proceed then with the agenda that's before us. And we did have a few remaining members that hadn't yet had a chance to present the article and the bill that they had been working on. So we have Senator Franzen with the early childhood part of the bill. So if you could bring the conference committee up to date on that provision. And the way I view it, it's at this point mainly educational, so we have some background and information on what you're trying to accomplish in that section.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. You have a hard task ahead of you, so I'll try to be brief and make it a very compelling argument for this part of the bill. My bill, as you all know, last year we increased funding for all day K, and for the first time, which was a historic achievement for Minnesota. And we also included early childhood scholarships for preschool, and that was funded at a $46 million appropriation, which covers only 9% of the funding need in the state. As you all know, all day K is certainly a laudable and great part of what we're trying to achieve to close the achievement gap, and also the work we're trying to do with the early childhood scholarships is certainly in line, ties really nicely with that. I do have a few handouts that you should have in front of you with some more information. But what we're trying to do, one of the things that we did last year was we had a cap in the early childhood scholarships, and we're trying to remove that because we want to have flexibility to use the dollars that we appropriated last year to allow the Department of Education have an average amount so we are able to really get to the neediest families and the most at-risk kids to get them ready for K. We're also increasing the funding, and some of that funding will be to allow us to work with that flexibility to remove the cap. The cap is at $5,000, and the average around the state has been about $7,000, just over a little bit, around $7,000. So we're trying to be more flexible with those dollars. As you all might have heard, there's some kinks. This is a new program, and we're working with them, and you have my commitment. I've been working with the department and with the Office of Early Childhood to make sure that we are tackling those issues like the long application. I've been meeting with my district as well. I represent part of a Hopkins School District, and I've met with them with some of their concerns, but they also shared with me some of their successes. So they were able to take 13 kids out of their waiting list from their waiting list for early childhood scholarships, and they also were telling me how with the new funding they would be able to open a new section. So those are great things that are happening across our state. A lot of the funding is going to public schools and to the public system and Head Start, and about half of it is going to private daycare providers. So, and it's all tied to quality. So if we're going to invest in this area, we need to add quality to the mix. And this is why this program is so successful and supported by so many people. As you can see in one of your handouts, it does have all the known supporters to date. And as you probably heard last night, which was great to hear from our governor, talking about the success that we've had and how we're trying to continue to build on that success. I would just add, too, that the Minneapolis Superintendent Bernadia Johnson also this is one of the district's top priorities. One of their top three priorities is early childhood scholarships. So we have a broad base of support, whether it's business community, whether it's school districts and others. It's a really great coalition, and it's a starting program, but we know there's successes there, and we want to continue to build on that. I can stand for questions, but I want to do highlight what the governor said last night. And I quote, increasing our commitment to early childhood education will be one key to closing the achievement gap and enabling all of our children to become successful adults. Let's all commit that by 2018, all 3- and 4-year-olds in Minnesota will have access to quality, affordable early childhood education. State funding for early childhood education scholarships was increased to $46 million last year, and the Senate wants to raise that amount this year. Early childhood education is real education reform. I hope you agree with that and support this provision, and I stand for any questions.
Okay, any questions? Senator Marquardt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Franz, and thank you so much for introducing this. And I know you're lifting the caps here to kind of a market rate, and my concern is how can you lift the cap and also increase the number of scholarships at the $8.8 million that you're investing here?
That's a great question, Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt. There's a few scenarios, and we would work with the Department of Education on figuring out what would be the optimal use of the funds. The original request in my bill this year was about $20 million, and we're now at $8 million, and I know resources are scarce, so it makes it a little more challenging to just remove the cap and just focus on the kids that are already getting the scholarship. So we could do some of that, and we can also, we have flexibility that we can do remove the cap for those who really need it and are able to continue in the program. Those that are above 100% of the poverty line below, we can make that determination. And then with the other funding, we can also increase some of those scholarships for new recipients. That answer your question?
I've seen some of the stakeholders here I know are working on some things, but that is a concern of mine, is if we're lifting the caps and it goes to the average, what I've seen of 7,500, just to keep at this 4,000, you'd have to have about a $9.5 million increase just to keep the same amount of students. And so I know it gets kind of complicated, and we're getting near the end, and I don't know how much work is being done by Department of Education right now, but I wouldn't want to put $8-9 million in and not increase the number of scholarships. I just don't think that's moving in the, And so have you locked anything down, or where's the Department of Education on this? Do you?
Senator Franzen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, nothing's been locked down. I do have in front of me some scenarios that I think were shared with you as well. And certainly, if it's the committee's intention, we'd love to, get the input in. And my personal goal would be to increase more kids to take advantage of these scholarships and serve more kids. That's why the original request was at the $20 million, and we could have done both, remove the cap and add more kids in this program a lot easier. But now the funding is scarce, so we are trying to be creative, and we want to have that flexibility to do that. So we haven't locked anything up, and certainly we would be able to do that. And if we want to put something in the bill that has a percentage of new scholarships, I don't know if that's the way we want to go, or just give MDH and Department of Education the flexibility to use the resources to as most efficient as possible, but also increasing access to scholarships.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
I know a lot of the discussion here is going to be, and probably the main difference between our two plans is the money we put on the formula versus early childhood, and we tend to be quite a bit different on this. And I do think that in early childhood and what we did with the scholarships and all day, every day K, you get the best value for the dollar in early education. No two ways about it. I'm a strong supporter of that. But that is just part of a big plan to close the achievement gap. And there's no sense to try to improve your eyesight if you don't have food, shelter, and clothing. The other things play a huge, huge factor. And today's dynamics have changed. With the flexibility waiver on the No Child Left Behind and last year's enactment of world's best workforce, this isn't your father's education financing plans anymore. It is high stakes for schools. And with the formula, the thing about the formula is that it gets out to everyone. And every single school has to meet the criteria of the world's best workforce. Every single school. And every single school has achievement gap problems. Every single school has not everyone reading at third grade level. Every single school has to get kids ready for a career in college. And it gets out to everyone. And, without that, simply the system comes crumbling down. And one good thing about the formula also is that it does, it's got the compensatory aid in there, where we're going to look at poverty, which is a huge indicator of the achievement gap. We're going to look at English language learners. It differentiates between economies of scales, with the sparsity being part of it, smaller school districts, having higher costs and so forth. So it does bring out those unique things. But one other point I want to make, because I know it's kind of I might as well kind of bring this out now, because I know it's going to be kind of a discussion, and Senator Wieger and I have talked about this, is that we had 10 years of disinvestment in education. In fact, just according to the Minnesota Department of Education, when they did their work group reform a couple years ago, showed that between 2003 and 2013, according to the implicit price deflator, we're 15% behind where we should be with inflation, 15% behind. And even what we did last year, which was pretty darn good, we're still 12% behind 03 in the real strength of the dollars coming into education. And the governor's own work group recommended at that time that our per pupil formula should be $6,300, and it's about $5,800 now. So the fact of the matter is we're trying to catch up. And if we don't get those dollars out to everyone, and I mean, we need to do the early ed, and we need to do those things that really target down. But it is those dollars that go to the formula that is going to allow schools in their own unique plans that they have to create to get to the goals of the world's best workforce. It allows them to hire specialists, allows them to lower classroom sizes, hire counselors. And we know, and just some local school districts, that are cutting teachers. Now, there's a local school district cutting over $800,000 in five teachers. You don't get to closing the achievement gap when you're cutting teachers. And it's the formula that provides those dollars. And so I think, I don't think it's between one or the other. I think they complement each other greatly. I mean, it's just you've got to have the kids with that early start. That's where we can close the achievement gap and spend a lot less trying to prevent it than spending billions trying to close it later. But without a strong formula and the amount getting out to districts where they can do their own plans, they have the flexibility, the local control, we're not going to build on any of those gains. And we've seen we've moved backwards in the last 10 years. And so I wanted to bring that up because I don't think we're going to have anyone testify to the 1% increase on the formula. And I know early childhood is kind of the one of the big components of yours, which I think is great. But I think as we move forward here, we need to make sure that there's strengths in both. And without the formula, that's really where a lot of this work is going to take place.
So. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just have your permission just to reply for just a second to Representative Marquardt, because obviously your commitment to public education is significant, and we saw the work you did last year in chairing the division for the first time. So I think everybody appreciates and applauds what you've done. And I don't in any way disagree with what you're saying relative to the placement of money into the formula. To speak in cliches, it's what a rising tide raises all ships or whatever. Boats. Mr. Nauman, boats. When I quote cliches, I sometimes make a little mistake here or there.
Let's check that out.
I think the concern on the part of, on the Senate side was that there certainly is a subset of children in this state that need a more intensive effort. And it's not to be dismissive of and the nature of Minnesota these days is that it's – you talked about your father's education or whatever the old-time schools were. Even somewhat more recently, Senator Franson could talk about some of the difficulties that take place within the Edina schools these days, that you don't have a lot of districts in the state are have-not districts these days. But the fact remains that there are many districts and many schools where you have at the front end the better ability for children to start to be successful in the school system. But you have some significant areas and some significant places in the state where that just doesn't happen. And that's why I think what the Senate's trying to do is to be more intensely focused on where those problems are. That you know, if you have a kid who's coming from a pretty decent background, to be honest, even if you have, it's not to defend higher class size, but if you have the hypothetical where you have a higher class size, you know, by a couple of kids, and you have a school that has a greater ability in terms of student population to be successful, the formula will make a difference overall, but it's not going to provide the intense educational experience for the kids, particularly at the front end. And I spoke about what we have in the Senate bill in terms of the back end on the secondary level, but you're not going to have the ability for those kids who really need the more intensive effort. And that's why we've aimed at early childhood as opposed to the money across the board. So that's, in my defense of where I think the Senate is. And it's not to suggest in a perfect world, I would hope we'd do both, and do both far beyond what we would do in a supplemental finance bill. And obviously, if we have success next year, and I mean success, I mean if we find we're able to continue to put money into the K-12 system next year beyond where it's been, you can bet that the formula will be a significant part of that.
And thank you. And Senator Cohen, I agree with everything you said there. And we do know that money alone does not assure success. And that's why I think what's happened the last few years has really been instrumental in that. Schools have to have a strategic plan. I mean, you can have the best players in the world, but if you don't have a strategic plan or a game plan for the football team, it's not going to go very well. And we know that districts need those resources to make sure you have the best quality staff and the best environment and the best technology. And I do think with the formula, you do have more flexibility to specialize and hit those unique students. So it's not like you just need a specific program to do that. This gives school districts the flexibility to do that. And look at the integration and achievement aid that we revamped last year. Representative Mariani and Senator Torres Ray really worked on those areas. And that's a much more effective program because it has accountability. So we know it's not just the dollars, but we are really putting high stakes on schools right now, and they need the resources to implement those plans. And the formula is the best way to do it. But the early childhood, I still say that's the best value for the dollar, but that's just one segment of a very large, important plan that you have to do.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Margaret. I don't disagree with anything that you've said. I think we need to not only put, we need to catch up and exceed in terms of where we are now with the funding and education in schools, absolutely. I don't know if $8 million is going to make a significant change, and I don't want to compete. We had this conversation in our Senate Finance Committee where we were debating whether we cut ELL to fund schools and to fund early childhood scholarships, and it's not one or the other. We need them all. It's how do we are more strategic, for instance, in the K through 12, and we're trying to work with our kids at that level so we don't have to remediate later. So I think this is some kind of the same concept. There's a lot of immediate need in kids that really would benefit instead of getting to all day K or K through 12, not ready for that either. So I think there's an argument there that there is bang for the buck to remediate early. So one of the anecdotes I had from Hopkins was that they had one child who was ELL, and he actually was moving forward much quicker because of the scholarships. They attributed the scholarships to be the factor for them getting to out of ELL faster, than if they didn't have that support. So they, you see them. There's small steps in the right direction. 9% is not enough, and every time we wait, we're not addressing more and more kids are falling through the cracks. So I think there's an immediate need here, arguably, versus the formula, and I completely agree that we need to increase the formula. So I hate to compete, because they're just different points of intervention, and I think we're really focusing on those kids and families that need it the most because they don't have access to, a Kinderberry or whatever other, people that can actually afford these programs. We're talking about just basic early childhood education that has quality, and it's not, we're not talking about those expensive programs. We're talking about the basic needs that a child needs to succeed throughout the system and throughout their lives. So I think it's certainly an immediate need versus I think in the formula context, but I don't want to compete with that because I think we need to do both.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Representative, or Senator Bono.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more comment to follow up on Senator Franzen's comments with regard to access. And going back to what you're saying, Representative Marquardt, to make sure whatever we do provide for scholarships really is about adding more children. You know, if we look at this as a supplemental finance bill, this isn't establishing what is the basic cost of a child's education. And I agree with you that we haven't adequately answered that question and fulfilled that demand. But in this particular age group, we don't get every child. I mean, things have changed in terms of public education. When our moms stayed home, you know, they were with kids in those early years, making sure that they were ready by the time they got to kindergarten. We've identified in today's society 3- and 4-year-olds have to be exposed to high-quality education, or they simply won't catch up. And so I just want to make sure, as part of this conversation, that we're talking about a population that isn't served. It's not about, are we serving them enough? They aren't served. And so that's where I land on first dollar goes towards a population that is truly at risk. And not for every child. We're talking about the at-risk unserved. And so it's just, you know, not even a question in my heart about where the first, second, third, fourth dollar goes. Thank you.
Okay. Just to close.
Senator Franzen.
Mr. Chair, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Chair Cohen from the Senate and Senator Wieger. Both have been instrumental in terms of moving this bill forward. It was the first bill heard in Senator Wieger's committee right off the bat to demonstrate the real importance that we are putting on early childhood education in the Senate. So it is really a signal that this is a great focus for the Senate, and Senator Cohen is my co-author in the bill as well, and Senator Wieger. So it certainly, I appreciate all the efforts for these two great senators to support this package moving forward.
I appreciate the reference to the great senator.
I knew you would.
And I don't know if any other freshman legislators, House or Senate, in the room, but that's a real lesson to really flatter your senior chairman. And very effective on the part of Senator Franzen. Do you get comments like that from freshman members?
You know, better than that. When I chaired the Education Committee, Representative Harry Mears from White Bear Lake, a woman gets up and testifies on an issue, and she was a former student of Harry Mears. And the next person to get up to testify, and this was an absolute coincidence, was a former student of mine who was on a school board. And so I did ask her who her best teacher had been. And we'd had that kind of an exchange. And she said, well, Representative Carlson, obviously you're the chair of the committee, so you were my best teacher. So at any rate, I did get a very similar comment, but it came from the public, which is maybe more important.
Well, Senator
but at any rate, Senator Franzen, your points are well taken.
Thank
Some
you.
Of us have had a real interest for a long time, and when we talk early childhood education, I do include all-day kindergarten, and you referenced that. Representative Wagenius and I, many years ago, we worked on a little project and got the very first all-day state-funded kindergarten sites started. And when you talk about high need, what we did in the end, because we had limited dollars, and we're always talking about limited dollars, we concentrated those based on free and reduced lunch, and then worked out a formula where we were sure to have some sites started throughout the state based on need. And it's very interesting for me, and I won't speak for Representative Wagenius, but probably for both of us, that we've seen the movement in all-day kindergarten, where we now have universal all-day kindergarten as a result of last session. So we're now at the next level, you know, and the question is how best to, with limited resources again, handle education. But I'm sure we'll continue to have this discussion. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next person would be Representative Kim Norton on autism, and I think maybe even a little broader than that. I think there's some other issues that she may bring up as well. Welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and senators and my colleagues over in the House. I do have a couple provisions that were on the House side, and then there's one that I'll speak to on the Senate side, and then a couple other non-autism-related topics. The House has some language that removes a dual autism diagnosis requirement under current law. It currently, and this was done last year, we had some language that said you need to be diagnosed by a licensed physician and or advanced practice nurse and a mental health professional, and that is really far too much, particularly for those folks living in rural Minnesota who don't have access to perhaps both in their community. And so in talking with the governor's staff and some others, I think we are we feel that removing that dual requirement will help families and won't do anything to hurt the program. The second part of the language is a parental fee limitation, and this particular issue came up because families are now going to, we're going to shut MCHA down. We've made that decision here at the state, and there are families who are receiving their services. Their children are receiving services through MCHA. As MCHA is being phased out, these families need to move from an MCHA product into the market, and about half of them, I understand, have done so. The others are having a little more difficulty getting placed, and part of it is financial. And so what we're doing here is the governor's early intervention benefit that we put in place last year is being delayed. And I'm not delaying it in the bill, but I am taking advantage of the delay that is occurring in the bill. And the funding that was allocated for that last year can be used to help these families enroll in TEFRA. And we put a restriction on the copay. So we're going to move folks out of MCHA and into TEFRA. It is only for 1 year, and I would say that is the downside. The hope is by 2016, we can have the provisions and the services be allocated in the benefit set. They are not right now, so this will only provide a gap for 1 year. That is not ideal. I will agree with that, but it is something that will help these parents transition off of MCHA and into TEFRA. And then we can move ahead after that, and hopefully more products will be available by 2016 for these families. So those are the two provisions that I have on the House side that the Senate hasn't seen. And the third one, the Senate has some autism language that authorizes the commissioner to use federal authority for a Medicaid state plan amendment under early periodic diagnosis, screening, treatment, and another provision. And so I think that also I would encourage my House colleagues to accept that as well. So I think, members, there's been a lot of work done in the area of autism in the last few years. We did the best we could last year to get a comprehensive package through, and I think the changes that we made to the large business product as well as the government's early intervention benefits that were a huge step forward, and the folks in the red shirts behind, I think, have told you that. This is just a couple tweaks in law to continue to move us in the direction that we need to go right now. So I would encourage your support, and I'm happy to answer questions if you have them, but if I would also, before I leave my spot, just like to put a plug in for a couple other provisions that this is mostly for my House colleagues, because the Senate once in a while has a really great idea, and they had a couple great ideas. One was the physical education study, and the House, we talked about it in the House, but it wasn't adopted, and so I would like to encourage members to accept the physical education study of the Senate. It's It's something we desperately need in order to find out what's happening in this state with regard to physical education in order to improve students' health. So I'll put a plug in for that. And also the pipeline provisions in the workforce development, and kind of crosses over a little bit into higher ed, but that's an excellent effort. There are many of us on both sides of the aisle that have been in the House and Senate aisle, but also partisan-wise aisle, that have been working to try to build a better workforce, and those provisions will really help us move in that direction. And again, we didn't have that on the House side, though we talked about it, and I think the chair was supportive. We just had limited funds, and I'm hoping that you'll see your way to be able to accept those.
Okay, any questions for Representative Norton? You covered several issues, so.
Mr. Chairman, I just got to ask Senator Cohen how you took the part where it said once in a while the Senate has a good idea. I was wondering why you took that.
Oh, complimenting the
yeah,
the
I
Senate.
Heard from the last speaker that I was
the
supposed
once
to
in
do
a while
that.
Part,
well, she complimented me directly. That's okay if you want to say it about the entire Senate. So.
Okay, Representative Mahoney. Oh, you're.
I'm going to say.
Okay.
Thank you
very
much.
You gave him kind of a backhanded compliment, right? Some of the time. So
I really appreciate your consideration.
We'll accept that.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Is Senator Dibble around? He wanted to. Oh, there you are. Because I saw you going out the door. And, there was something that. You have something.
You know, just it's kind of leave.
Yeah. Senator Dibble, you're next. You wanted to comment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was ready to. I know that there are a number of provisions in the transportation. Yeah.
This transportation sections is what we're going to be doing.
Oh, sure. I was going to do that in conjunction with Senator Hornstein.
Yeah.
Or Representative
and we
Hornstein.
Have Representative Hornstein is
all
here.
Right.
So,
great. Thanks.
If you're. I didn't know if you wanted to comment before. We've got the sections here. You're going to move the sections?
Nah.
He's next on the agenda. And then we have Dan. Okay, this would be the non-general fund items in the supplemental budget bill. And so if both House and Senate chairs could come forward. And we'll start then with the R30 through 32. That's House Sections 7 and 8 and Senate Sections 2 and 3. My notes say similar with technical differences. So if you could just briefly comment about that. We've been working on same, similar, and what have you. So it looks like one that we will be moving forward on, but we should know a little bit about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You'll recall a couple days ago when we presented some testimony, we talked about only one rail inspector for 4,500 miles of track. So this is a provision in the bill that increases the number of MnDOT rail safety inspectors. And I'll defer to staff if you need an explanation of the technical differences.
Okay, Mr. Lee, did you have anything to add?
Actually, maybe Mr. Burris will be
okay.
More appropriate on this.
Mr. Chair and members, the technical differences on this provision just have to do with having a colon in one version.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move adoption of the Senate language.
Okay, the motion is to adopt the Senate language. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The next one would be R35, House Section 11, and Senate Section 6. Again, that's similar language with technical differences.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, this is we have issues again around oil train safety, and this is a MnDOT report around grade crossings and how to improve those. And I'll ask Mr. Burris to explain the technical difference.
Mr. Chair and members, the technical differences here have to do with the placement of a couple of commas. There's no substantive difference between the House and Senate.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I move the House language.
Senator Cohen moves the House language. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We'll go down to the next section. This would be Article 13, House Article 13, and it would be R43 through 44, and that would be Senate Section Number 9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this was an item that was brought in by amendment to the transportation bill by Senator Senjum. And, Mr. Chair, there will be an amendment to this. But the short version is that it would allow vehicles operated by commercial vehicle inspectors of the Department of Public Safety to use the crossover access roads between northbound, southbound, or between opposite direction interstate freeways. The idea is that these public employees should be able to cross over when they see a motorist who needs their attention, needs some help.
Does everybody have the amendment? Oh, everybody has the amendment. This is what it is.
I don't think. So I think there's an 1147 amendment.
It's the A14-1147 amendment. And if one of you wants to explain the amendment.
So, Mr. Chair, what the amendment accomplishes is it takes out the language you see on 53.26 of the side-by-side, which reads, or certified under Section 169.781. So it just confines the authority for the commercial vehicle inspectors who are employees of the Department of Public Safety to use these crossover lanes and not third parties or, you know, private entities.
Okay, and I think everybody has then a copy of the amendment. So, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the 14-1147 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Section as amended. Did we strike everything?
I thought. Sure. Yeah, I think
you could have respect everything.
Instead of the second.
Yeah. Over-dimensional vehicle.
With this.
That's the end.
I still didn't hear. Yeah, because this was a strike. Yeah, that was my question. Okay, we go down to the next one then. We have the R44 through 51, House Sections 3 through 11, Senate Sections 10 through 18.
Mr. Chair,
who wants to explain that one? And then. Well, that's what I was double-checking on, and Senate staff said that because we had adopted the amendment, we didn't need to adopt the section. So we were taking the Senate staff position.
always a good policy.
I had the very same question, so that was the answer. So it'll be in the bill. Okay, the next one, Senator Dibble or Representative Hornstein on the R44 through 51.
Mr. Chair, so this is a kind of a lengthy provision, but it's actually pretty simple. This was offered by Representative Anzels and Senator Saxhog, and the very short version is that it allows for commercial vehicles for the overweight permits to be renewed at the same time that the vehicle registration permits are renewed. It's just an ease of administrative effort on their part so they can sync up the renewal of their various permits at the same time at their initiative, at their request. It doesn't have to happen. They can do it if they can request that driver vehicle services do that. And I think there's a technical difference. I think it's a difference of commas, right? Yeah, where commas are placed, and we prefer the house commas.
Okay. So sometimes those can be important. Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, move the house language.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The next one, Senator Cohen, we had on the list. There was an amendment passed on the House side that we need to check out before we adopt this particular one. So let's put that one on hold, if you would concur. So that would bring us down to the R 61 through 62, House Section 20. And that's a House only. And we have an amendment that goes with it. But if you could comment on that is the Metro Transit Shelter design and maintenance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This is an amendment related to the provisions that we discussed the other night. Representative Clark authored on the House side, and after the hearing, the Met Council had a concern related to some of the specific language around requirements around doorway dimensions. And this addresses that issue, and the Met Council is here if anyone would like any additional testimony.
Okay, any...
So that's the A202 amendment.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, that's... I think that's been distributed. Does everybody
yes.
have it? So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A202 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion, any questions?
Excuse me.
Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Now we're amending the current language, so we'll have to do it. Now, on this one, we will have to then adopt Section 26 as amended.
So, Mr. Chair.
Section 20.
So, Mr. Chairman, I make the motion to adopt House Section 20
as amended.
As amended.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you.
I think that's it for transportation for the evening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members, chairmen and members.
Is Representative Loeffler here? No. Okay. That brings us down to the higher ed policy section. You want to stay where you're at, or?
Well, we just stay where we're at.
Okay, that's fine. And which of you would like to speak first? We've got four sections.
Five.
Mr. Chair,
that you've agreed to, or is it five?
Five
sections.
Mr.
So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonif and I have been in communication almost every day since the committee started. Remarkably, these are Senate positions that we worked on, and I think we've come to some good compromises. So, I will let Senator Bonif present them, and I think we have a good agreement on these.
Okay, we've got. If we follow the list here, Senator Bonoff, we've got the R4A1, resident tuition.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd actually spoken briefly about that when Representative Murphy talked about her veterans initiatives, and that was just the provision that made certain that veterans pay in-state tuition regardless of where they come from. And Minsky, in fact, goes beyond that currently, so we do have a provision in the language that makes sure that they continue to do what they're already doing. Where you'll see it have the most effect is with graduate school, because currently the University of Minnesota does not have that provision for grad students. So we were pleased to be able to do that, and Chair Plowski was happy to do that as well.
Okay, so Senator Bonoff, do you want to move?
I move
Senate position for Section 8.
Yes, I move Section 8.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. The next one, state authorization of reciprocity agreements, and that would be Senate Sections 9 through 4. By the way, this is Article 1, or 14, 9 and 14.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a provision that actually Chair Pawlowski carried as well, and I believe you also worked on, Representative Carlson. And this is called the SARA language. This is an interstate compact agreement where this is happening all over the country. States are coming together to say that we will honor the tuition for distance learning. So there's tuition reciprocity. And so we've actually been asked by our private colleges, by the university, various professors have called us saying, please enter into the new SARA compact so that we can take advantage of the interstate commerce tuition reciprocity. So I would move the Senate sections 9 and 14 with this language.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The R7A1 and R8A1, the study abroad program safety, and this one we will need an amendment as well.
Yes. Yep, there is an amendment, and so I would move the A84 amendment.
Okay, does everybody have the A84 amendment? It was handed out earlier. Apparently everybody has it. Or is getting it. Okay. Senator Bonhoff moves the A84 amendment, and if you want to explain the amendment.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, members, this original bill, the Study Abroad Safety Initiative, was carried by Representative Seltzer in the House. And in working with Chair Pawlowski, as we explained, that really the intent of this bill is to just require that there's safety reporting from our post-secondary institutions so that when they offer study abroad programs, that our institutions of higher ed just let us know how, if there's deaths occurring with these programs, if there's incidents which require hospitalization, and then to collect aggregated data with regard to sexual assault by country. And Chair Pawlowski rightly suggested that this be carried on the Secretary of State's website, given when families look at going abroad, they often, if they're looking from the federal perspective, they'll go to, you know, travel.gov, and so it made sense to have the primary place of carrying the data also be at the Secretary of State's office. So we discussed that with the Secretary of State's office. They were happy to do that. In addition, there is the underlying bill also directs the Office of Higher Ed to come back and report if there's additional measures we can do to ensure the safety of our study abroad students.
Okay, and from the House perspective, in addition to Representative Pawlowski working on it, as you point out, Representative Seltzer, I know I had several conversations with her about this provision as well. So a motion?
I would move the A84 amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed.
Aye.
Motion carried.
And then I would move sections 15 and 24 as amended.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The R8A1. The Minsky Multicampus Articulation Agreements, Senate Section 18.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, again, there's an amendment for this provision. That amendment is the A85.
And Representative Pawlowski, I know you've been working on these as well, so feel free to chime in.
On this one, I might have to because of what how we're changing it. So, Mr. Chair, members, we're looking at the Charting the Future initiatives of MNSCU and the task forces that are being set up. I've had conversations with the Chancellor and also with the various groups that will be serving on the task forces, and since these are charting the future of higher ed, and this is an initiative that would articulate agreements for the future, we're hopeful that we will have a mechanism in the Charting the Future task forces that will be working on this along with any other entities that will be involved. So I would hope this would give a practical purpose to the Charting the Future task forces inside MNSCU.
Okay, and Senator?
Well, so perhaps, Mr. Chair, for now, let's just move the amendment because that is what the... Well,
that's what we need to do, but yep. Representative Pawlowski, even though he spoke to it...
I'll move the A85.
We'd have to have a conference committee member to move
right. The
amendment.
I move the A85.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
And then with regard to the underlying provision, this was a provision that we've talked about for quite some time as we toured our 22 campuses, Senator Claussen and I, this past interim, and many House members and Senate members in those districts joined us. We heard over and over from students, particularly at MNSCU campuses, their extreme frustration with inability to get the credits that they expected to when they transferred. And so what we're doing here is we're requiring multi-campus articulation agreements whereby if you went for 2 years, you get 2 years' worth of credits. And so I think that Chair Pawlowski is rightly assigning the duty to figure that out to the Charting the Future appropriate committee, but I would also just acknowledge that Senator Miller actually met with the IFO and the two-year association of faculty, and they agreed to abide by this language. And so it really was a consensus, and so I think we have an opportunity to make a difference with this provision.
Okay, and Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there were the various groups, the interfaculty organization and others, also worked on the initial language. The addition of the Charting the Futures is a concern that I would hope that these Charting the Future task forces will also be using the student groups and the faculty groups in charting the future of MNSCU.
Okay.
So I would move the Senate Section 18 as amended.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The R8A1.
Yes.
Senate Section 21, Student Loan Refinancing Plan.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not certain that if you have the most current form of our agreement, because we are just, in this case, we're not going to put forward an amendment. We're going to move the Senate language. And what this is, currently, when the students are taking out loans at the federal level, they can be paying as much, you know, somewhere north of 6%. Sometimes we hear 8% on their loans. And we have been quite concerned, as we've all spoken about, the amount of student debt that is currently on the backs of our young people. And so working with council, and I see Mr. Fuller walking around, we work very closely with him to devise a way that we could use the borrowing power of the state and the creditworthiness of the state to allow students to refinance those loans at, say, 3%. And so what this does is it directs the Office of Higher Ed with some very tight parameters to develop a plan by which they will refinance those, but we tell them they cannot do that until June of 2015 because we require them to come back next February and explain exactly how this is going to be accomplished. And so there's no money associated with this. This is currently money that they have available to them within the Office of Higher Ed that, say, for example, they could be using to refinance and authorize self-loans, but we aren't fully taking advantage of that, and so there is additional ability.
Okay, and it was just pointed out to me, Senator, when you said an updated, I said Section 21, but apparently I just received the updated version would be Sections 10, 11, 12, and 21. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we've had some discussion with this. This was also a bill by Representative Morgan, but when we had our 14 hearings on the University of Minnesota's budget and the Minsky budget and then the subsequent hearings on their current proposals, loans were a huge issue with us. So we're hopeful that what we're going to see is a report back where there may be at least a partial way to alleviate what is a loan issue but also a debt issue, and we know that debt is one of the big impediments now for higher education. And we would like to begin to turn that around.
Okay. Senator?
Very good. So I would move Senate Sections 10, 11, 12, and 21.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to acknowledge Chair Pawlowski because it really has been a pleasure working together. And Chair Pawlowski has taken the lead on the financial issues and particularly on some of the Minsky financial issues. And so while we were doing the policy on the Senate side, we have worked closely together on all the financial issues. Well,
thank you for those comments, and thank you, Representative Pawlowski. I've had the pleasure of working with him as well on higher ed issues. We have kind of a common history. I chaired that division for more than a year or two.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think some of us owe
still remain very interested in
some
it.
Of us owe you a great deal of gratitude, and we're going to try to restore the budget process to what it once was. It's not going to be 12 slides presented to us for $2.7 billion anymore. It's going to be about the numbers.
We used to meet 4 and 5 days a week, if you'll remember. We really delved into those higher ed issues years ago. So,
Mr. Chair, that's why I alluded to the 14 hearings I had just on budget, not on slides.
Well, thank you very much. Let's see. We are next. HHS policy items. We've got some health and human service provisions. Health Article 24, Senate Article 20, dealing with the health department. Okay, we have Article, 24 on the House side, Senate Article 20, and the first one that's up is House Section 1, Senate Section 2, Thief River Falls Psychiatric Hospital.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Senate language, but it's identical to ours.
Okay.
And this is a... the Thief River Falls Hospital currently is a critical access hospital, which means they can only have 25 beds plus 10 mental health beds. And what they would like to do is move to 16 mental health beds, so they're splitting their hospital into two parts, one of which will be the critical access hospital, 25 beds, and the other will be the mental health hospital with going from 10 to 16 beds, and this has been approved, tentatively approved by the Department of Health that has to oversee hospital expansions.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The next is House Sections 3 and 5, Senate Sections 4 and 6, the Integrated Licensure. Senator Lori.
It's printed on everyone's sheet as well. On line 4,
Okay, so Senator Lori, you incorporate that, in your motion. Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in the favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Now we go to House Article 25, Senate Article 19, health care. This would be House Section 37, Senate Section 28, Federal Qualified Health Center Claims Processing. Which of you would...
And Mr. Chair, I should just mention, there's one section on here that's out of order. At the bottom of the page, there's a Senate Section 1 dealing with federal receipts for Minnesota Care. That also would belong to House Article 25. So that would be a recommendation. There would be a Senate, that would be a Senate-only section with an A90 amendment.
Okay, and we've got the A92 amendment here, I think. It should have been distributed.
Mr. Chair, A90 amendment.
A90. Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the amendment.
I don't see it here.
Is it 90?
Okay. Hold there. You found it. Okay, we have the A90 amendment before us. Any discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, just let me explain. Yeah, I'm not sure. As usual, the House was ahead of the Senate, so... And when we passed our bill, since we passed it a day or two ahead of the Senate, the federal rules changed. And so what this amendment does is simply say that we're going to abide by the federal rules, which would not allow us to directly put federal money into the Health Care Access Fund for this particular thing. So we're just adapting. To federal rules.
This was an MFB request for proper receipt of federal funds.
Okay. Yeah, and I had mentioned A92, and I see what you meant where it was down. We picked it up down lower on our sheet with, where the A90 came in. So everybody found that one then. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, I would move the
new section.
House of language on section 28, but we will also need an amendment to that, and that would be the A92 amendment.
Yes.
So I would move the A92 amendment. And then I guess we adopt the House language.
Yeah.
Okay, the A92 amendment. Everybody find that one?
Yes.
Okay. And that motion is now before us that we adopt the A92 amendment. Representative Huntley?
This actually was a very controversial issue because the federally qualified health plans were not getting paid in a prompt manner by some of the health plans. But after a lot of discussions, everybody's agreed that what's in this amendment as amended is the way to go.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried.
And then, Mr. Chair, I guess I would move that we adopt section 37 of the House language as amended.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, it's just to clarify, it's House Section 28.
Okay.
Yep.
Section 28, okay, that we've got that under the Senate column here.
We have that under the, I think.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I'm sorry, it is 37. House Section 37.
Okay. So we have the motion then that the House Section 37 as amended be adopted. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Now we go down to House Section 38, Healthcare Homes Advisory Committee.
House only, and they've explained it. It looks like a pretty good plan. I move the House Section 38.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Now we go down to Senate Article 34, Federal Authority for Emergency Medical Assistance.
Have an A-74 amendment to bring that.
The A-74.
So I'd
everybody
move the
have that one.
A-74 amendment. And then there was some, when this list got published, I know that there was some concern amongst the advocate community when this said no money and it had EMA on it. This is a non-money item related to EMA. It is, we are not addressing the Senate-only provisions that have EMA money attached to them. We're not discussing those tonight. This is an EMA provision that with this amendment that's been worked on with all the stakeholders would instruct the commissioner in consultation with the stakeholders to try to find ways to make the EMA program more efficient. And so it's a non-money item. It's not that we're moving no money for EMA. We have yet to talk about the money issue.
So that's down the road. Okay, the motion to adopt the A-74 amendment is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Senator Lurie?
And then do I need to move Senate Section 34 as amended? I move Senate Section 34 as amended.
Okay, a motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now go down to House Article 26, Senate Article 16, Children and Families. This would be House Section 3, School Age, Child Care, Licensing, Moratorium.
And, Mr. Chair, I would move House Section 3, but we'll have to have Lynn Aves explain what this one does.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a provision that would allow an already existing moratorium for a school-age child care program to be extended for an additional year. The Department of Human Services has been working with the proponents of this legislation, and this is an agreement that DHS and the proponents have come to.
Okay, any
where is it?
Further discussion? Okay, the motion then is to adopt the House Section 3. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Aye. Motion carried. We now go down to House Article 30, Senate Articles 15 and 21. This is the miscellaneous section. And a new Section 1.
Hey, Mr. Chair, that's the one.
Oh, that's the one we did. But that was with the amendment A90 when we dropped down. Okay. That brings us in to the Senate Section 5, Article 15. Center for the Victims of Torture.
Mr. Chair, I've got the A67 amendment.
Okay, A67. Everybody have that one. You want to move the amendment?
Well, we need to do that Section 1 again. No? I had it written down that we had done it. So the A90, we have it now. So maybe we, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I thought we had adopted the A90.
I thought we did. Well, if there's any doubt, we'll adopt it again. Okay. I thought we did, but Senator Lurie, just to make sure.
The A90, again, this was the MMB request that we make sure that the mechanics for the receipt of the federal money in support of the new Minnesota care is handled properly. And so I move the A90.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. I hope it doesn't appear twice in the bill when we're done. No, we didn't. If you say we didn't, we didn't.
Mr. Chair, I think the confusion was that we called it the A90, and it was really the A92. And so the
when
A90
hadn't dropped down. Okay, that was okay. Well, I'm glad you're watching out for us.
You had it. We did.
now I have it checked off. So we okay. So now we've adopted the A90 amendment for the new section one.
And then did that new section go in the conference committee report upon adoption of the A90? It's yes. A new section.
So we're done.
That's
then?
The rule. That okay.
So the whole new section is done with that amendment. Okay. Yep. Then we go down to the
Senate section five. And Mr. Chair, I'd move
that's
the
Center for Victims of Torture.
I'd move the A67 amendment.
Okay, the A67 amendment. Everybody have the amendment.
And this is a Senate-only provision that's been agreed to by all parties that would hopefully allow the Center for Victims of Torture to provide their targeted case management in areas outside the metropolitan area.
Okay, any discussion on Senator Lurie's motion on the A67 amendment?
All the parties.
Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Then we need to move Senator Lurie the section.
Mr. Chair, I'd move then Senate Section 5 of Article 15 as amended.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. The next one is the House Section 6 report on waiting lists.
And Mr. Chair, I would move the A193 amendment to that section.
Okay.
Some minor changes.
Is before us. Any discussion on the A193? You want to mention what that one is? It's asking a report on waiting lists. What are we?
The overall Section 6 is having the DHS report to the legislature on how long the waiting lists are for a variety of human services programs.
And then the amendment asks to look at costs.
And the amendment just sort of clarifies that.
Okay, so any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt the House Section 6 as amended.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. I think that completes the HHS, right? What are these all dealing with? Transportation? Leftover? Okay, so those are all done. And Senator Cohen, we go to transportation now. Are we done with that?
The parties agreed.
Okay, yeah, because we dropped down to that. Okay. I think we're done. We'll be in a temporary recess.
Public's leaving.